Life coaching and discovery. Inspiration with an invitation to learn from a self-discovery guide. Mark is passionate about you making positive changes in your life so that it becomes a vibrant, ongoing journey of growth and discovery. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Now, here's your host, Mark Susnow.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow. You're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Thanks for joining. And today I have another great guest. I know you'll be happy. And that's really what we're going to talk about is habits of a happy brain. This is a subject that I've been intrigued by, something that I've read many, many books on, heard people talk about it. How do we be happy? And I've always have said that happiness is a choice. And again, with that choice, I've made a decision when I started this show that I would interview people that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who would kind of mold us, guide us. And with that in mind, I invited somebody that I heard at a writer's group I belong to. She wrote a book called Habits of a Happy Brain. She's written several other books. She's runs what's called the Inner Mammal Institute. She's written a book called The Science of Positivity. And she traces back our happiness to different animals, different mammals. And she talks about the happy chemicals like serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, endorphins. And I'm excited. She just joined me to have Loretta Breuning on my show, the Inspire Possibility Show, and I hope you're inspired to see new possibilities in your life. So, hi, Loretta. How's it going? Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Loretta? Hello? Can you hear me? Loretta, are you there? Hello? I see her, she called in, but for some reason we're having a bad connection. But anyway, she wrote a book, and she says that through this book you can boost your happiness in 45 days. And it's all about habits. What you have to do really is retrain your brain to activate these chemicals that make you happy. So, the happy chemicals, again, are serotonin. How many of you have heard of serotonin? What about dopamine? What about oxytocin? What about endorphins? I know most of us have heard about endorphins. And what it is, it's really about establishing neural pathways. And that's what we want to do, is we want to establish neural pathways.
Hello,
are you
Mark?
There, Loretta? Hi.
Yes, do you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, I'm
okay,
so glad.
Thanks.
I'm so sorry. I just found another phone to call you with. I don't know what was wrong with that phone.
All right. Well, I'm glad you made it because I wanted to find out how I can be happier.
Great.
Happier,
okay.
Happier,
well,
happier.
The amazing thing is that our brain is not designed to be happy all the time. So that would be nice if that were the case. But when you look at the chemicals that make us happy and you see what turns them on in animals, you see that they only turn on in short spurts for specific reasons that motivate survival behavior, and then they turn off. And I was so amazed when I learned this because I thought, oh, my gosh, so that's why they don't go on all the time and why we have ups and downs and why they turn on for reasons that are so hard to make sense of.
So tell me that again now. You talk about these chemicals related to survival.
Yeah. So these
are you
the
saying
chemicals.
That? Are you saying?
Oh.
Are you saying that these hormones are related to survival?
Yes, exactly. And they turn on because they make an animal feel good when it does something that promotes its survival. And we're saying survival from an animal perspective.
Uh-huh. So how does this apply to us? In other words, I'm like somebody, like a lot of people, I'm going through my day, things happen, upset me, and I get triggered. So how does knowing about an animal survival instinct, how does it help me be happy now?
Well, let's start with the question you said, like, why do we get triggered? So it's so fascinating. We've all heard about how danger chemical cortisol creates that predator feeling, but it's interesting to know that cortisol also is triggered by disappointment. For example, let's say I'm a lion and I'm trying to chase a gazelle because I haven't eaten for a week. So if that lion chases a gazelle who got away, the lion is going to starve to death. So once the gazelle gets away, it has to learn when to give up. And cortisol is that bad survival threat feeling that says, okay, enough already. Stop running after that. Find something else to run after. And that's part of our survival mechanism. And when you're not starving and haven't eaten for a week, you run after other things that trigger your dopamine. So if we talk about the happy chemicals, so dopamine is the one that turns on when your brain says, you're just about to get a reward, like, wow, I can get this, I can get this, I can get this. And we may have nice little drips of it during the day as we take each step toward things we expect to meet our needs. And then once in a while, we have a nice big surge of it when we get more than we expect. So if you can imagine like a lion going through his day, like constantly looking for opportunity, and it gets a good feeling when it sees an opportunity and a bad feeling when it loses an opportunity. But the lion isn't judging itself. You know, the lion isn't saying, oh, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with the world? You should be having a, you know, a higher batting average.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The chemicals just evolved for, like, step on the gas or step on the brakes. And we humans, with our extra brain parts, have added this historical sense where then we judge our results.
And is it judging? Is that so we have, let me just kind of extrapolate what you just said, is that when, so the lion, right, it doesn't, it has this rush of these chemicals, right, the happy brain chemicals, when it thinks it's going to get the gazelle. But then if it doesn't, it gets the cortisol or the disappointment, or what happens?
Yes, exactly. It gets the cortisol because in the lion's world, it really is a death threat not be able to catch the food that you're seeking.
Uh-huh.
And that negative feeling tells the lion, this gazelle has gotten away, stop chasing it, start looking for a better opportunity. So if we can think of our own negative feelings that way, you know, it's like, oh, it's just information that I should stop chasing that opportunity and look for a better opportunity.
Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm more interested in is I still don't see really about knowing about the lion, because you're talking about a survival instinct, and most of us are people I know that certainly listen to the show, and probably a lot of people you know, we're not really on a survival thing. It's not like life or death. It's not like somebody's got a gun is going to shoot us. We're talking about day-to-day stuff. So how does this information, I mean, what I'm interested in is what I mean, I have your book in front of me, by the way, and I just love the topic of your book. You know, habits of a happy brain, and I was just thinking when I was waiting for you to check in, is that this would be a great gift to give somebody, because everybody, you know, everybody wants to to know about how to have a happy brain. And what I like is your 45-day plan. In other words, if you have in this book like a 45-day plan, how people can you know, instill these positive habits. Or, and I guess what I'm wondering is, are you saying, and I always say, by the way, in my voicemail, I used to say anyway, until people asked me to change it, because I said it for about 5 years when somebody would call me, I used to always say, remember one thing, happiness is a choice. And what I'm hearing you say is you kind of agree, but you're also saying that happiness can be a habit.
Okay, so, and you asked a very good question. So what's the bridge between the primitive survival instinct and the everyday ups and downs of a modern human?
Yes.
So here's the interesting thing, and this is why I call it the Intermammal Institute. So mammals are social creatures because they can't survive without some social alliances. So the minute a mammal's physical immediate needs are met, it starts focusing on social needs. But with the same sort of way of like, it feels good when you're going toward a social reward, and it feels bad when you see an obstacle to a social reward. Now, when your social expectations are disappointed, you consciously know that that's not a survival threat, but you still have the same operating system as your ancestors. And when your immediate physical needs are met and you're not like foraging through the wilderness looking for your next meal, all of that survival energy gets poured into who sits at the table with you in the cafeteria. Now, that's the next aspect of all of this. How our brain makes these decisions about what's a reward and what's a threat, it depends on the neural pathways we've built from past experience. But which past experience is very quirky? It turns out that anything that turns on a surge of happy or unhappy chemicals connects neurons. Anything that connects neurons before age 8 and during puberty builds superhighways because there's a chemical myelin that sort of paves the highways and makes them super efficient. And then the electricity in your brain tends to flow into the path of least resistance because we don't have enough bandwidth to do everything with conscious calculation. So we have to do a lot using these old pathways that we myelinated in puberty. So that's why everybody sees the world through the lens of the ups and downs they had during puberty. Now we have a bandwidth to focus on, like, whoa, I'm not going to do that. But that bandwidth is limited, so we have to put so much energy to do that, to steer away from the automatic, that we can only do that for one thing at a time. So you can choose to invest your energy in, like, re-steering certain thought pattern, but you have to choose to invest that energy.
So let me ask you a question. You talk about, you say invest the energy.
Yeah.
Would you kind of say that another way? What do you mean by invest the
energy? Oh, sure. I'd be happy to. Do you want to give me an example? Because, I mean, sometimes I choose very relevant examples, and sometimes I choose ridiculous examples so that people could say, oh, I would never do that.
Well, what I'm saying is just in our life, you know, again, I want to come back to, I like to make things, again, back to this, you know, day-to-day stuff. I mean, that's what intrigued me about inviting you to be on the show was I think what people want to know is, okay, hey, you know, tell me, you know, I think people would like to know is about your plan, about this 45-day plan. Because, you know, to know why we're unhappy is like, you know, people sometimes go to therapy. Sometimes they'll even,
like,
you know, they'll talk to coaches or whatever. But what I'm interested more in is, okay, hey, here is what I think a solution is. Because sometimes if we dwell on what's wrong, all we do is reinforce it. So let's talk about, again, you know, I don't want to, I mean, I understand that when I have negative feelings, and this is something too, is I guess it's that what's first, is it the chicken or the egg? So, like, do you have these chemicals released then you get the negative feeling, or do you have the chemical release and you get the positive feeling? That's kind of what I was curious about. Or what happens, you have the experience, and then you get the feeling.
Yeah, and I'll, definitely, yes, but let's focus on the solution. I absolutely agree. Like, you don't want to just go around in circles talking about the problem. So, first you have the experience. We could call it the negative experience, but just any experience. So your brain is always taking in more information than it can possibly process. So you have to let information flow into the circuits that you already have, because that's the only way we can make sense of the world. So once your brain flows, electricity is flowing that was activated by your experience, and the pathways that you have are connected to your happy chemicals, which are how is this good for me, and your unhappy chemicals, which are how is this bad for me. And then these chemicals turn on and off, and so you either have a good feeling or a bad feeling, and then maybe you notice it or maybe you don't notice it for a while, so you don't always know what turn them on. But eventually you may notice. And so the question is how to turn on to a different feeling. And the simple answer is you have to build a new pathway. So that's my 45-day plan, is to build a new pathway in your brain so that your electricity can flow effortlessly in a new way. So I'll use a simple example. Let's take a person who wants to quit smoking. Now, in our area, like, a lot of people don't smoke, so I'm just using that as an iconic example so no one feels accused, but we can all substitute that whatever other thing, which could be a behavior, but it could also be a thought habit that you want to get rid of. So the person who is smoking, they are smoking because it feels good. But it doesn't consciously feel good. It's a pathway in your past that said, whenever you're in pain, having a cigarette will make the pain go away. Now, that's not, you know, consciously true. It's not what you're literally thinking. But the pathway got built because at some time in your past, when you were feeling bad, you did this thing and it felt better. And so your brain was like, whoa, so that's what it takes to feel good. And that pathway is there, and your electricity flows there. So how can you give your electricity a new place to flow? You have to
So let me just so what you're saying is, like, this example with smoking, it could be related to eating, to diet, to a lot of things. So this is a good example.
Anything.
All right, so that, and that's the question. Okay, yeah, and I understand what you're saying. At some point in the past, you got this, you registered maybe when you're this good feeling inside on a deep level with smoking a cigarette or eating a chocolate. That's a biggie for a lot of people, chocolate.
Yes.
Or coffee, or a cup of coffee.
Yes.
And so you have an association, a neuroassociation with like a cigarette or maybe a piece of chocolate or whatever. And the question is at some point you go, you know what, this is not good for me, or afterwards I feel unhappy. How can I instill a new habit?
Absolutely, yes. And
so how do we do that? That's what I want to find out.
Okay.
That's why I want to jump my show.
The reason that the cigarette or the chocolate felt good, or it's not necessarily the chocolate or the cigarette itself. Often it's because a social need was met. So one simple example would be that you hung out with the kids who smoked, and so your normal mammalian fear of being separated from the herd was relieved because now you are safely a member of the herd because you smoked. That's just one example. Another example that I use in my book is, let's say you're afraid to talk to a girl, then you have a cigarette, then you talk to the girl and she likes you. So from your mammal brain's perspective, nothing is more important than getting reproductive opportunity, we call it. And then,
right, oh, there you go.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily.
That's how you weaved it.
Yeah.
Now I get the connect. Now you weaved it in.
Yeah.
There you go.
And it doesn't necessarily mean you did anything with that girl, but the fact that you got acceptance is such a big surge at that early in those early years, and it's so relevant to your long-term survival, genetically speaking, from your brain's perspective, that a huge connection that got built, and you weren't consciously saying, oh, okay, so this is how it works. First you have a cigarette and then you get the girl. Obviously you're not consciously, or first you have a chocolate and then you get the date. But the way it works is that your brain built a pathway. So the solution is to build a new pathway. So the next time I want the courage to go out on a date or to talk to my boss or to start a new project after my last project was rejected, those are all the things that make us feel bad. And I think, well, if I have a cigarette or a chocolate, or if I curse my neighbor or some, you know, whatever the habit is, then that makes me feel better for a minute and pushes away the fear of whatever is the unmet need. But then these feelings only last for a short time, so then you got to do it again and again and again. And the unmet need is always unmet, not because you're a jerk, but because that's how a brain designed to work, is to constantly look for the next thing. That's what kept our ancestors alive in a horrible, horrible world. So we have inherited a brain that is always looking for the next thing. So how can I have less impulse to do this old habit is to build a new habit. So what is that new habit going to be? If I say, well, instead of smoking, I'm going to eat hot fudge sundaes, well, obviously that's going to have its own bad consequences. So in the adult world, there's no one simple panacea where you could always do one thing and it will always make you feel good all the time. That's sort of an illusion. So there's two answers. So one is to have a variety of these tools and to use them intermittently, which I can explain. And the other is, if you're in an urgent situation, for example, like you're taking a very dangerous drug or you have a sex addiction and you're about to get kicked out of your relationship and you want to do something really fast, a short run, immediate something that feels better. And the example I always give is, I'm going to read a novel for 10 minutes because I'm just dying to have time to just sit there and read that novel, and I never give myself those 10 minutes. So I'm going to choose, instead of constantly obsessing about getting things done or making people happy, that I'm going to give myself, every time I have an urge to do that bad thing, I'm going to give myself 10 minutes to read that novel or do that other sort of sustainable habit that I would like to do. So anyway, so the bottom line is, if I do that for 45 days, I'll build a new pathway in my brain, and that will tell my electricity, my electricity can flow more easily in the new direction, and it will feel less traumatic to not flow in the old direction.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. My guest today is Loretta Breuning, the author of Habits of a Happy Brain. And so people, I assume, can get your book on Amazon?
Yes, and anywhere else.
Right.
And my last name is Breuning. Habits of a Happy
Brain. And if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Oh, innermammalinstitute.org. innermammalinstitute.org, and just click on contact. And I might just say the subtitle of my book, because it summarizes Habits of a Happy Brain: Retrain Your Brain to Boost Your Serotonin, Dopamine, Oxytocin, and Endorphin Levels. So it explains each of these.
You know, what I'm curious about in your book, you say 45 days to a happier brain. Is this the idea that you read this over 45 days and each day you do something different? Or what's your recommendation with that?
So here's a simple analogy I use. Imagine that your brain is a jungle of neurons, which it is. We have billions of neurons that we're born with, And our neurons are unconnected when we're born. So whatever connections you built in your youth, that makes you the unique individual you are. But to build a new pathway in your brain in your adult life, it's like slashing a new trail in the jungle. So imagine you go to the Amazon and you're trying to get from here to there, and there's like a modern paved highway, but that goes to some yucky city that you would never want to go to. So if you want to go to some beautiful wilderness, you have to carve a new trail. So imagine how hard it is to carve a trail in the jungle. That's how hard it is to make your electricity flow down neurons that aren't already connected. I give a simple example. It's like learning, it's like speaking a foreign language and quitting smoking at the same time. So the idea is, if you're taking a step through the jungle, you're working really hard just to take one step, you work really hard to slash the next step, and if you go back to that path the next day, it's already grown over by, because, it, you know, the jungle grows over. So that's what it's like in your jungle of neurons. But if you slash the same trail every day for 45 days, a path gets established. And once a path gets established, yeah, then your electricity can flow.
I'm definitely going to do it. It's that, you know, the other thing I think, Loretta, and I would say to my listeners, is something like this can be a lot of fun. I mean, it's something that, you know, you can just have the book by your bed, and you can read a little bit every night, and that's kind of what I think that I would do, is read a little bit every night and follow your suggestions and kind of make it a challenge or an adventure. I like to make things an adventure. That's for me like a metaphor.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And one way to look at it is, if you have some huge thing that you want to change, maybe you don't want to do that as your first project. You may want to do a smaller project just to get yourself the feeling that it works. So the one simple example I use is when our dopamine is flowing, we get the feeling of like, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. And then it's easy to get discouraged because we obviously can't do everything we think. Mm-hmm. So anything you can do to build that dopamine pathway. So the simple example I use, like, let's say I feel like I'm surrounded by mess, like everything in my house is a mess and I just don't know where to start and everything I try to do doesn't work out. So you could either take like the sock drawer that frustrates you, or you could take like 6 square inches of your desk. So choose a small enough goal that you can succeed in the next 10 minutes. And say, okay, for the next 10 minutes, I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to succeed at X, something that I want to do that I will feel good about. And if you do that every day, yeah, then if you do that every day, you're going to build a circuit that says, oh, I can take on a challenge and succeed. And then you expect to take on challenges and succeed.
Okay, well, Loretta, we're running out of time. So
okay.
Thank you for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And what I like to do at this time is to ask my guests if there's one thought you want to leave the listeners with, what would that be?
You can do this. Don't wait for other people to make it okay. Don't feel like your unhappiness is serving some higher purpose, but just give yourself permission to feel good in a way that you can create.
So it's almost in a way, what you're saying too, it's just, it's okay to feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, any last thoughts you have that you want to share? We're got about another 90 seconds to go.
Okay, yes. My book has a huge thing about serotonin, and it explains in the state of nature how it's related to competitiveness. Nobody likes to think about this or talk about this, but when you understand your own competitiveness, you can stop torturing yourself with this mammalian urge to compare yourself to others, and that's a huge relief.
Okay, well, listen, Loretta, thanks for being the guest today. I just always find topics about happiness, and there's so much written about it, and there's neuroscientists are doing more and more studies about the nature of the brain and how to change the shape of the brain, and there are books on the Buddha brain, and I think that your book is a great contribution. So thanks for writing the book, for being committed to sharing this with writing the book, and because I know what it takes to write a book, and I know you've written several of them, and the commitment, and the great feeling when it's done. So thanks again for being the guest on the Inspire Possibilities Show. For us, everybody listening, until next time, journey on, and we'll have another great guest, and I hope you tune in then. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another conversation of the Inspire Possibilities Show. Every week I have somebody who I find that we can learn from, that I can learn from, and hopefully you can learn from somebody who has something to say. And sometimes I never know who these people are going to be, how they're going to show up. And actually, I had somebody scheduled for today, and their publicist called me, and they canceled. And later yesterday, I was at a talk, and I heard this woman talk, who's an author, she's a speaker, and she talked about something that I've talked to you about with other guests, and it's about fear. It's about how really fear kind of runs our life. It really prevents us from living the life that we really want. And when you think about it, think of all the areas of your life that, because of fear, especially the fear of failure, you don't really go for it. It might be a relationship. You might be afraid to put yourself out there, somebody that you'd like to get to know, but you have that fear of rejection. So you don't put yourself out there. You don't really say, hey, I'd like to get to know you. And that's always weighing on us. Probably started in childhood, or probably, I'm sure it did, actually start in childhood. And it's just that reaching out, maybe career choice. We just think that this opportunity, we're not qualified for this opportunity. We don't have what it takes. We don't have the education. We're not intelligent enough. We don't have the looks. We don't speak the right way. And all these considerations always seem to come up over and over again. And that's really what stops us. So how do we get in touch with that fear and to start to really look at it? And in my world, if you've read any of my materials, you know that I'm really big into acronyms. And a great acronym for fear is F-E-A-R, is false evidence appearing real. And that's goes back to my legal background. It's that false evidence, that appearing real, it's that assumption we make. It's that factor we go to. And if we could just get rid of that, I know I also refer to this fear factor sometimes as that voice, that negative voice that says, you know, you can't do this, you can't do it, and it stops you from really putting yourself out there. So when I heard Jacqueline Wales yesterday give a talk and discovered that she wrote a book called The Fearless Factor, I invited her to be my guest on today. And she is just came on the line here. And are you there, Jacqueline?
I am, Mark. Thank you. I'm sorry, a couple of minutes late. You know, you get involved in something and you look up and you go, oh my God, look at the time. There it goes.
Maybe that's the fear, huh? Maybe you're experiencing
the
fear factor.
No, I think that's called slow. I think that's called passion.
Slow. Procrastination. Well, you know, I'm just curious, though, like I was kind of joking about, you know, slow and procrastination. Do you think that there's a relationship between fear and procrastination?
there isn't a relationship between fear and procrastination. There's a lot of resistance that goes on in procrastination that's usually around the idea of perfection. You know, if I can't do it right, I don't want to do it at all. There's okay. also the fear of failure, which is a huge one. In fact, in many of my presentations, when I ask my audience what's the greatest fear, the fear of failure comes up again and again and again. And I think that's another big reason for procrastination. Why bother starting? Because I'm not going to be able to do it right. And, you know, there's also the fear of rejection and the fear of judgment. You know, there's all kinds of fears that people put up, you know, as barriers to their success. And I like to start with one simple premise, which is this. Fear is imagination-based. We make shit mm-hmm. up in order to mm-hmm. quell the anxieties and the uncertainties that we have going on. And I think that when we can hold our fears up to the light. I have one question that I ask my clients all the time. Is it true? When I ask them, what's your greatest fear? And they kind of have to go around the block on that one a little bit. But it generally comes down to asking that question. Is it true? And 9 times out of 10, I'll tell you, the answer is no. I just made mm-hmm. it up.
Right. You know,
because unless we're physically threatened, yeah, it's a belief system. Unless we're physically threatened, it's a belief system. And,
right. And I think
you have to question your beliefs.
Right. And what you and I are talking, we're not talking about the fear that you have when you face a tiger or a lion. We're talking about the fears that just show up in everyday life that are not based on reality. They're just based on this. I think a lot of it before you came on, I talked just kind of what you said about the fear of rejection, fear of failure, and it's really it's a thought form, it's a habit. This idea of mm-hmm. sometimes, and how do you get out of it? How do you break that habit? If it's a habit,
well,
how do we break that habit?
It's a training. You know, I think you have to catch yourself in the moment. The reason why I wrote The Fearless Factor, Mark, was simply because I had had a lifetime of dealing with my own fears and uncertainties, my own lack of self-confidence and self-esteem and so forth, which is very hard to believe at this point in my life. And, you know, asking yourself, what was that all about? But a lot of it was embedded belief systems that I wasn't good enough. You know, many times fear comes down to two things, that I am not good enough and I'll never be loved. And these are two primary things that we want in our lifetimes. How many people do you have in your coaching practice who are really there because they don't feel like they're good enough? And so they struggle with their confidence. They struggle with their communication. They struggle with trying to have an impact in the world. Most of the time, they're in their own self-defeating behavior. So how do we change that? We change that by starting to notice. You know, I think in any change process, it starts with awareness. Look at that.
Uh-huh.
Look at what I do. And then you start to question, how can I do this differently? And to get to the other side of fears frequently means I got to go right through it, like an express train. We mm-hmm. just got to go for it. Many years ago, there was a book written called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers.
I've read it.
And many people have heard of it and some have read it. But Susan was one of the first people to really put down in a kind of a personal development. I hate to call them self-help books, but I would call it a personal development book. That really laid out, you know, what fear was. And she said in her book, fear is, you know, what our fears are is that we're afraid we can't handle whatever it is that comes our way. Now, Susan, actually, before she died, endorsed the Fearless Factor and and made sure that I was going to quote her properly at the end of the day. So she says, fear is our essential lack of belief in our ability to handle whatever comes our way. That was Susan Jeffers right there. So I'm quoting her exactly.
Yeah. Let's stick with that for a bit here. So can you mm-hmm. let's say that again and let's just talk a little bit about it.
Sure.
So fear is
our essential lack of belief in our ability to handle whatever comes our way.
I like that a lot. So let's just break that down. Okay, mm-hmm. how it shows up. So fear is, you say, our essential belief.
This is our essential belief, our essential lack of belief, I should say, is our essential lack of belief that you can do whatever it is that you want to do.
Or that you can handle whatever comes up, right?
Right. And you know, one of the things I say to people frequently is, think over your lifetime. Think about the number of challenges that have come down the pike. Now, if you've reached a certain age, like I have, there's quite a lot of that.
And I have.
Yeah. I mean, most people do. You know, you can go all the way back to your childhood. And, you know, I talk about how, you know, fear was inculcated into my existence because I had a father who was a raging alcoholic who took it out on his kids. He used to beat us up. You know, the fear piece was real. And to your point a few minutes ago, you know, fear is a primitive response. And they've done studies on the brain to show where that actually happens. It's that little amygdala at the back of the brain. It looks like a walnut. And that's your primitive brain. So what happens is the neurons get fired up. And the neurons are back at the back of the brain. Before it gets to the frontal cortex, where you have time to think about it, you're already in it, you know. And I'll give you a real-life example of the belief system. Many years ago, I was having an argument with my husband, and he raised his hand very quickly, and I ducked. And he looked at me, and he went, "You didn't think for a moment I was going to hit you, did you?" But it was so instinctive in me, the fear that somebody was going to hit me, that, you know, in that case, the fear is somewhat real, but it's become so ingrained in the belief system that you're in it before you even know you're in it. And that's what happens for many people when they're caught up in their fears. That belief system kicks in. And that belief system that you're not capable, that you're not good enough, that you never will be good enough, you know. And you heard me say yesterday, you know, that piece about you'll never be good enough, I got that absolutely pounded into me growing up until one day I was standing in front of a group of people and I said, look at this, you know, it's not true. It's not true.
You know, it's interesting because we've never met before until yesterday. And my new book that's going to be coming out soon, The Soul of Uncertainty, I talk about how we have basic fears in the top of the that we have our whole life, starts with childhood, and it we have it our whole life, is that this feeling that maybe I'm not good enough, or you talked earlier about I'm not good enough and you know, I won't be loved. But that's, to me, it's I won't be loved, or I won't have love, is related to I'm not good enough. And that feeling just keeps coming back, and I think that you have to, some level, make peace with it and accept it at a certain level, but not let us, I find is, it's okay, and it's okay to have fear as long as it doesn't stop us. And that's what courage is.
That's right.
Having that fear. So how do people get your book? How do we get your book?
Well, you can go to Amazon. It's on Amazon, The Fearless Factor. And you can buy copies of it there. It's one way. You can also come and visit my website. It's called thefearlessfactor.com. Or you can go look at my other website, which is called InnerFluence. And InnerFluence.com is how to build greater influence in the world. And what does that look like? And again, it always comes back to your confidence and your ability to communicate and so forth. So I talk a lot about influence as well. And people get caught up in their fears around, you know, what do people think of me? And the bigger question, of course, is what do you think of yourself? And that's what InnerFluence is really all about with that one. But, and you know,
self-love.
There's a wealth of information on both of them. Self-love, totally. I said many years ago, when you learn how to love yourself, other people love you more. It's an interesting situation when you think about
it. You know, I tell this story of, I remember when I was going through a crisis a few years ago, a friend of mine said, hey, look in the mirror and look in the mirror, look at yourself and say, I got you, babe. And whenever I do that, I start laughing. I mean, it's hilarious, but you know what? It totally changes the energy. You know what I'm curious about is we've kind of identified the a lot of the human predicament, the human challenge, which a lot of us live. We live in this anxiety, this fear that really holds us back. But let's talk in the time we have left. Let's talk about a strategy. How do we break out of this cycle? How do we change it so that we become more courageous? And I know I'm into meditation and things like that. And I'm just curious about, you started to talk about becoming aware as the first step, is to really notice when you start to get into that state. So tell me more about what your approach would be if you were coaching somebody, and I know we talked before, you're like me, you're a coach. So if somebody has mm-hmm. this fear, how would you guide them? What would you do? Give me a situation that comes up for you.
So a situation that comes back, for instance, that you've got an important interview coming up. You've got a whole kind of scenario going on in your head about what the conversation is going to look like and how you're going to be judged and is your resume good enough and are you dressed mm-hmm. properly. And you've got this yes. whole cycle of stuff going on, and you've built an enormous scenario for yourself before you're even in the door. So then you arrive at this room with this stranger, and you know that you're being judged because they clearly want to know if you're the right person for the right job. And you're sitting there trying to figure out what your answers are before the questions are even being asked. Well, in that case, what I like to say is take a step back out of this situation. And if you're already in the building and you're in for this interview and we're just, putting that out as a scenario, I want you to go into the bathroom, and provided, you can feel comfortable, there's nobody else in there, you need to be able to, first of all, get into your body. You get into your body by spreading your feet to, hip width apart, and you're going to actually square your shoulders. So that means dropping your shoulders, not most people go around with their shoulders up around their ears. Drop your mm-hmm. shoulders so you're actually engaging your muscles in the sides mm-hmm. of your body. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to spread mm-hmm. your arms out. Now, I did martial arts for years. So the body and the energy of the body is critical. And when you spread your arms out and you've got your feet at hip width apart, you're taking up an awful lot of room. And I want you to feel that energy that goes from fingertip to fingertip, all the way from the top of your head to the root of your feet. And just feel that energy for a moment. And while you're doing that, you're going to take some very deep breaths.
I'm doing it.
And you're going to do that 3 times. And as you do that deep breath and you're holding that energy of the space around you, and then you let your arms down and you move a little bit, I guarantee you, you're going to be far more centered than you are with that yada yada radio playing in your head
uh-huh.
about how you're going to perform. So that's step number one, is get in your body. Step number
Let me just say one thing, is that what's yeah. amazing is, as I said, the first time we met was yesterday, and you're telling me, this procedure. When I was a lawyer, trial lawyer for many years, I do the same thing. I go on for a deposition. I'd be nervous and everything. I'd go in the bathroom, and I would do a similar process with my breath and my arms, like a Qigong exercise. I'd do the same mm-hmm. thing. Of course, I'd make sure nobody was in there.
Right.
Oh, we got a
right.
crazy
otherwise
here.
Otherwise, you feel like, you go to some crazy person, and then, again, I get the anxiety of, oh, my God, I'm being judged.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm stupid. So finding that quiet spot, it doesn't have to be the bathroom, but find a place where you can
right.
really take up this space. Uh-huh. Because especially, and I want to say this specifically to women need to take up more space in the world. Too many women walk around making apologies for their existence. And frankly, I used to be one of them, and I'm not anymore. And I'm very much an evangelist as far as, get out there and make some noise. But making noise brings up an awful lot of fear, because again, it's that judgment, that situation where, I'm going to be seen as arrogant. I'm not going to be seen, as this nice, caring person that I really am. So quieting the head is really the big piece of this. So when I talk about, again, we're still in the scenario, you're in the interview.
Right.
How about you try to stay silent? I had a client couldn't keep her mouth shut. She really wanted to prove her credentials. She really wanted to let people know that she knew everything there was. How many times was that woman rejected for the job? A lot. And this was a highly qualified individual. Huge resume, wonderful credentials, but she couldn't help herself. She couldn't help the fear from taking over and being in that place of having to spout everything. So I say to you, be quiet. Listen. Listen to what's being said. And don't try to form the answer before the questions are being asked. So, in other words, one of the things we do with our fears is get curious. Get curious about what's that about. Get curious about what's going on for someone else. It's not your job to be a mind reader, and that's part of the problem. You're not supposed to be figuring out what people are going to say and what people are going to do. Now, when you grow up in an unsafe environment, like I did when I was a kid, I was always watching for signals of when the bullshit was coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I got very good at reading people. I got very good at reading people, but I also have a highly intuitive nature. So, you know, I kind of know how to maneuver around social situations and so forth.
So let me ask you, Jacqueline, back to this interview here. You're saying listen, not try to figure out what the other person's thinking or they're going to ask. But isn't that contradictory to being curious about where they're at?
No, because what it's doing is you're creating space to listen to what the other person is asking. So, for instance, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. That's a very simple
mm-hmm.
question. How many
mm-hmm.
people go into, oh, I'm not very interesting. There's nothing for me to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that comes up a lot. Instead
mm-hmm.
of which, you know, well, let's start with a few basic facts. And then you kind of ease into the conversation as opposed to, again, like my client who wanted to just fire hose. This is who I am. This is what I'm capable of. Here's my credentials, blah, blah, blah. So when I say be curious, not only be curious about what the other person is and who they are, because let's face it, in an interview, if we're going back to that scenario, you're interviewing them as they're interviewing you. And most people forget that aspect of things.
They do. Absolutely.
You are committing yourself to a company and to, you know, I like to say people join a company and they leave a boss. That happens all the time. So
mm-hmm.
you're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. So again, be curious in terms of what's going on in this company, but most of all, be curious if you have a reaction, what is that about for you? Where's that insecurity that's coming up? Where's that uncertainty? You know, you're talking about your latest book, Mark, and I think it's a wonderful subject. I've been reading a book on uncertainty myself recently. There's a great quote from Tony Robbins that goes like this. The quality of your life is determined by how much uncertainty you can comfortably live with. Now, I'm going to repeat that because it's worth listening to again. The quality of your life is determined by how much uncertainty you can comfortably live with. So back to our interview situation, you're uncomfortable. You're uncertain. So be there with it, which is the other side of getting past the fear. Just be
mm-hmm.
there with it.
Be
Don't
with
try to
fear.
Run away. Don't try to cover it up. Don't try to, you know, put some kind of gloss on it so that it's not so apparent. Feel it, like Susan Jeffers says. Feel it. Have the courage to sit with it and know that this too shall pass. It's an emotional reaction. And if we know anything about emotions, we know that they are always transient. They don't hang around for long. Unless your behavior perpetuates it. And that's what the fear is. So the perpetuation of that insecurity, that perpetuation of the judgments that you make for yourself about who you are and how you're performing in the world, and worrying about what other people think of you, here's my advice on that one. What other people think of you is none of your business.
I've heard that one before many times. That's a good
yeah.
one. I mean, you see that
a
lot.
It's a really
nowadays.
Good one. What other people think of you is none of your business. And yet, because we're so insecure, we want to make it our business. We want to make sure that they're thinking highly of us. We want to make sure that they're not sitting in negative judgment of us. And that's a fear. And so again, quiet it with the breath, be centered in the body, and know that this too shall pass. Now, that might sound like really obvious advice, and it ain't easy. I get it. I really do. It takes a lot of courage to face your fears. But that's exactly what's needed. You need to really take that chance that what's on the other side of that fear that might be holding you up, whether it's the fear of rejection, the fear of judgment, or whatever, is of your own making. It's the stories we tell ourselves. I like to say we're either living in other people's epic novels or you're the author of your own life. And if you're the author of your own life, you're in control. And that's a big piece right there.
The author, the director, the choreographer, the producer. The publicist.
Everything.
So
I mean, we're 100% responsible for our lives, aren't we? I mean, you know this, Mark.
Exactly.
I know this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to, you know, we're running out of time. We have about 4 or 5 minutes left. And what I like to do is around this time is really say to you, and I think you've kind of covered it with this interview, but what would you like to leave our listeners with? What would be your core message if when they think of you, just like you made a Tony Robbins quote and you quoted Susan Jeffers, what if somebody was given a talk on this subject and they were going to quote you, what would you want that quote to be?
My favorite quote is this: being fearless is not the absence of fear. It's the habits and behaviors that we develop to get beyond the fears, because fear is always with us. But I'll add another little piece to this. The biggest fear for many people is the fear of failure. And I like to say we are all failing our way to success. Every single one of us is failing our way to success. And we know that you've probably heard that one as well. But being fearless is not the absence of fear. You haven't heard that one. Well, now you have.
I've heard that one, but the other one about failing as a way to success.
We are all failing our way to success. That's one of the quotes that I have in my book, and it's something that I feel very strongly about. Without failures, we don't know what success looks like.
Right.
And when you add up the number
way,
of times you failed, you got more successes.
Right. So what's next for Jacqueline Wales?
Well, Jacqueline Wales is very involved in taking the work that I've been doing for the last 10 years into corporate America, which is a very troubled space at this point. There's a lot of very unhappy people in the workplace. And my job right now is to deliver some emotional intelligence processes and trainings that help people to connect better, to build trust, to get past their fears, to develop relationships with one another that make a difference. Because my fundamental philosophy is this: if I can help people to be better people, we'll all create a better world to live in. And that's really all there is to it. Very simple.
And currently, right now, what are you most grateful for in your life?
I am grateful every day, pretty much, for the life that I've been blessed to have created for myself. I have a beautiful home. I have a wonderful family. I have great friends. And I'm doing the work that I am most passionate about every single day. And when I look at all of that, I think to myself, how blessed can you be? And no matter what is going on that could be better, and there's always something that could be better, I wake up every morning grateful for everything that I have at this moment. So yeah, that's where I sit. And I keep a gratitude journal every day, and that's another piece I also recommend when I deal with my clients who have a lot of fear. Keep a gratitude journal. Keeps you clean, keeps you honest, And it keeps you out of the negatives and puts you into the wonderful, wonderful stuff that we all of us have in our lives every day if we pay attention. That's the mindfulness piece. And it goes along with meditation. It goes along with the awareness, the consciousness. Raising consciousness is really a big piece of this. So being in gratitude, yeah, every day. Good thing.
Well, thank you for being the guest at such short notice.
Well,
it was a privilege. I feel it was a privilege and honor. And I'm grateful for you for the work you do in the world and your commitment to make a difference in people's lives. And also I want to acknowledge you for writing these books, because I know what goes into writing books, and there's a lot of commitment, frustration, elation, and it's just very, it's a challenge, and it really takes a real commitment. And I want to thank you for your commitment for being who you are. And
thank you,
for
Mark,
being
and
the guest.
And thank you for inviting me. And again, you're also one of these change makers in the world, and we all need people like you and me. And that's, you know, what we've come into this world to do. So if we can offer just a glimmer of hope, a glimmer of other possibilities, then I think we're doing our job. So I thank you for the opportunity to share this with your audience.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. 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 Imagine the possibilities.